1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News, the presidential debate. I'm Daria Albinger. They shook hands and then the gloves came off at the ABC News presidential debate, the first face-off between Vice President Harris and former President Trump. He says she's copied some of his policies.
Everything that she believed 3 years ago and 4 years ago is out the window. She's going to my philosophy now. In fact, I was going to send her a MAGA hat.
And she had this to say about his claim he left office with the best economy in U.S. history.
Donald Trump left us the worst unemployment since the Great Depression. Donald Trump left us the worst public health epidemic in a century. Donald Trump left us the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. And what we have done is clean up Donald Trump's mess.
This could be the only time the two meet to debate. This is ABC News. Trouble is brewing for Keurig.
The SEC has charged Keurig with making inaccurate statements about how easy it is to recycle K-Cups. Those are the disposable pods used to make coffee in a Keurig machine. Keurig has agreed to settle the $1.5 million civil penalty.
ABC's Mike Dubusky. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo defending his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, specifically in nursing homes, before a Republican-led House subcommittee.
All credible studies now say that COVID came into nursing homes through community spread and infected staff, not hospital admissions or readmissions. Numbers don't lie. 35 states had a higher death rate in nursing homes than New York.
Cuomo said there was plenty of blame to go around. He says he was following federal policy at the time. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Give the star in your life the brightest gift in the world. Name a star after them. This is Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $59 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, you can name a star for birthdays, weddings, or even memorials. Over 45 years, we have named millions of stars for celebrities and individuals from around the world. The star you name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Visit starregistry.com or call 800-282-3333.
Matt Nair on air.
Wisconsin Public Radio Dodge County clerks backtrack on using drop boxes after concerns from Republican sheriff in order to prevent the perception of voter fraud.
What is he citing as any sort of proof of concern about this?
Gut feeling.
It's a gut feeling.
Yeah, inherently.
Feel it in your bones.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. An appeals court rules the boy accused of killing 10-year-old Lily Peters in Chippewa Falls more than 2 years ago will be tried as an adult. James Kelly reports.
The decision was originally made by a Chippewa County judge, and a three-judge panel in the Court of Appeals ruled to uphold that decision due to the seriousness of the offense. Their ruling states that the defense failed to show that a reversal waiver would not depreciate the seriousness of the offenses. The now 16-year-old suspect is charged with first-degree intentional homicide and sexual assault.
I'm James Kelly.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court is considering a request to open guardianship records for some voters. A conservative activist is trying to find ineligible voters and cast doubt on the 2020 election. Justices heard arguments in the case on Tuesday. The court's not expected to issue a ruling before the November election. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
The Packers will have to get by without QB1. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with Sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. Jordan Love is expected to miss 3 to 6 weeks with an MCL sprain, and head coach Matt LaFleur says that rumors of the Packers looking for another quarterback are unfounded.
Despite reports, it's crazy to me, like, how people come up with some of these things, and I think you're always, You explore every possibility, but at no point in time did we ever have any discussions with anybody.
On Sunday, it will be the Green Bay Packers taking on the Indianapolis Colts as each team seeks its first victory. Wisconsin football plays Alabama this week, and head coach Luke Fickell says that they're the best program in college football.
Over the last 20 years, who's been the best team in college football? And there's no doubt it's been Alabama. So regardless of where they are at this moment, this is as good a football team that there is in the country and has been for a really, really long time. And
kickoff is at 11 a.m. Saturday. And tonight, the Brewers begin a six-game road trip in San Francisco. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska for Civic Media Sports.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Evening clouds with maybe a sprinkle or brief shower, partly cloudy tonight. Lows in the low 60s. Mostly sunny and warmer for Wednesday and Thursday. High in the mid-80s Wednesday, upper 80s Thursday. Sunshine in mid-80s again Friday. It's 71 right now.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us for a very special edition of the show next time live from Waukesha, Wisconsin for the world premiere of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 82 Brewers, players, filmmakers, and more in your calls. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Johnson. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 3 p.m., and that means we're talking money. And I couldn't be more humbled and privileged to welcome my next guest, Dorothy Brown, the Martin Ginsburg Chair of Taxation at Georgetown University Law Center and author of The Whiteness of Wealth, How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and How We Can Fix It. Dorothy is a nationally recognized scholar in the area of race, wealth, and tax policy, and she also currently serves as an inaugural member of the Treasury Advisory Committee on Racial Equity. Welcome, Professor Brown. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
This is so critically important. Over the last couple of weeks, nearly every day, in various ways during this half hour of my show, we've been talking about this fundamental fact that we tax work much more heavily than we tax wealth and the investment income that people earn. And this has a particularly pernicious racial wealth disparity impact. but I want to start at the very beginning, because you began in a place thinking that tax policy was neutral since tax laws don't mention race at all. And your research led you to the conclusion that it actually does have this disparate racial impact. Tell us about your evolution. How did you end up studying this, and what has your research shown you over time?
So I grew up in the South Bronx, and I dealt with racism regularly. And I knew I wanted to be a lawyer, but I decided I wanted to do a type of law that had nothing to do with race. Racism shaped so much of my day-to-day life. I didn't want it to shape my job. So I said, oh, I know, I'm going to be a tax lawyer because the only color that matters is green. So I go about my business. I go to law school. I get an LLM in tax. Meanwhile, as a good daughter, I'm doing my parents' tax returns. And I'm getting the idea that something is wrong. I'm doing everything right. Their tax return is very simple. My mother was a nurse. My father was a plumber. Their incomes were roughly equal. Some years my mother would make more than my father. Some years my father would make more than my mother, but it was in like more than $1,000. And I didn't give it a second thought. I just knew something was wrong, even though I was applying the law the way it was supposed to be applied. So fast forward, I become a law professor, and instead of an investment banker, which is what I was doing when I was doing my parents' tax return, I had time to think and I had time to read. And I read an article that asked the question, how do you know there isn't a race and tax problem if you don't look? I almost fell off my chair. I'm like, race and tax, really? So I said, okay, let me look. And the first thing I discovered was the IRS and Treasury don't publish statistics by race.
I think that's
really important.
That is revelatory. It's like between me and you, Dorothy, we could stop talking right there and be like, if you ain't measuring it, you know something funky's going on. Because like my spidey sense goes right away. Like, oh, they're not tracking racial demographics. That's fascinating. I'm sorry. Continue.
No. Thank you, Maggie, because that's like a really big part of this story.
Yes.
The narrative that taxes, of course, are race neutral. Why would we track it? We don't disadvantage anyone. We don't even collect the data. But what we know is, for example, there's a study out of Stanford in January 2023 that showed if you were Black and filed for the Earned Income Tax Credit, you were 3 to 5 times more likely to be audited than if you weren't Black. So this agency that says, oh, we don't collect race, you know, finds a way to use audits as heat-seeking missiles towards Black taxpayers, right? So step one,
we could talk about auditing the Earned Income Tax Credit and how stupid it is to chase those dollars when we got billionaires dodging in the lowest effective tax rates and go ahead, friend. I'm just popping out of my chair here on the other end of the radio.
Exactly. So once I realized that the data wasn't available, I had a choice. I could say, oh, well, I guess I can study it. Or I could say, wait a minute. This seems odd. And let me, instead of looking for tax data, I looked at race data and applied my tax lenses to it. And then I was able to unpack the mystery of my parents' tax returns, which really is about something called the marriage penalty. Mm. When two people get married, their tax rates could stay the same. They could go up or they could go down. If your tax rates go up because you pay a higher tax as a result of getting married, we call that the marriage penalty.
Yes.
If your tax rate goes down, we call that the marriage bonus. Well, couples like my parents, where the spouses earn roughly equal amounts, get hit with the marriage penalty. Mm. So my parents were paying so much in taxes because they were married to each other and they contributed roughly equal amounts. And that was just the beginning. That was just the tip of the iceberg. Once I started down this path, whichever tax provision I looked at, I found racially disparate outcomes.
It's like, I hate using this movie reference, Professor Brown, but I feel like it's the Matrix. Like once you see it, you can't unsee it. And then you see it every single place.
Yes.
You say in your book that the system of wealth building in the United States, and if folks have been listening to the show, you know that we value income earned from wealth more than we value as a society, because our tax policy tells us so, then we value income earned from work. So the system of wealth yes. building, we already know, is prejudiced against work. But you say further that the system of wealth building, prejudiced against work, is also designed to build white wealth, not black wealth. Why is that?
Because of the types of assets that are subsidized through our tax laws. So let's pick home ownership. That's one of my favorites, yes. right? So the majority, like 74% of white Americans are homeowners. The majority of white Americans have been homeowners since at least 1950.
Yep.
In 1940, the majority of white Americans were not homeowners. But thanks to FHA insurance, thanks to government intervention, the minority of white American homeowners became a majority between 1940 and 1950. Well, those programs expressly excluded Black Americans from benefiting from it. We had redlining. We had an FHA that would not insure mortgages in Black neighborhoods. Okay, so anytime we have subsidies for homeownership, we are subsidizing a raced asset. And it's a raced asset because our federal government did it that way.
And in case people have never heard this before, I want to emphasize this point because it's so crucial. Before the FHA and the federal government insured and underwrote basically home purchases for the middle class, you had to basically walk into a bank and plunk down the money to buy the house, or at least the vast majority of it. It wasn't, oh, I got 20 Absolutely. Or 30% down. That's what changed between the 40s and the 50s. And the redlining Right. that Professor Brown is speaking of was published by the federal government, and it basically drew red lines, because warning, around neighborhoods that were predominantly Black and brown and said, this is not a good investment. This is not a good insurable mortgage risk. And as a result, Black and brown families didn't get the federal assistance, the federal underwriting, the federal subsidies for housing. And we know now that yeah. housing boom for white households is how white families built generational wealth that we see exactly. today in many ways.
That's exactly right. So we have tax subsidies for home ownership, not just with the mortgage interest deduction. There's a tax break if you sell your home at a gain.
Yeah.
Up to $500,000 of that gain, if you're married, you can receive tax free.
Yeah.
So when we talk about who's a homeowner and who's going to sell a home at a gain at $500,000, we're really talking about generally white homeowners.
Folks.
Okay. So the way we build wealth through homeownership benefits white Americans more than Black Americans, even when we compare white homeowners to Black homeowners, because white Americans and Black Americans do homeownership differently. White Americans tend to live in almost all white neighborhoods. Black Americans tend to live in racially diverse or all Black neighborhoods. And if a Black American is like the only Black American in an all-white neighborhood, then they will have access to that increased wealth. But it comes at a price.
Yeah.
It comes with you being the only Black person in your neighborhood and your neighbor perhaps calling the cops on you one day when you're trying to get in your house like they did on Ving Rhames in L.A.
Yes.
Or if you have children that go to school, your children are going to be tagged as discipline problems when they do the exact same thing their white peers do.
And expelled at higher rates and disciplined at higher rates.
Absolutely.
All of we got to put a pin in it. We're going to come back. My guest this half hour is Professor Dorothy Brown. She is the Martin Ginsburg Chair of Taxation at the Georgetown University Law Center and author of The Whiteness of Wealth, How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and What We Can Do to Fix It. Because I want to get to that part. We know about the redlining. And listen, here in Wisconsin, in the Milwaukee Metropolitan Statistical Area, the most segregated MSA in the country, that book, The Injustices of Place, right? That,
yes.
The Color of Law, all of these things. We're going to give folks some resources. We're going to put that on the show page for today so you can read more about this. We're going to continue to break it down with Professor Brown, and we're going to talk about what we can do about it. When we come back after these brief messages, it is the 3 o'clock hour, folks, and that means it is Maggie talking about the millionaires and money, money, money here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're joined by Professor Dorothy Brown. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, everybody.
Don't you have homes?
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Matt and Air on Air.
Wisconsin Public Radio, Dodge County Clerks backtrack on using drop boxes after concerns from Republican sheriff in order to prevent the perception of voter fraud.
What is he citing as any sort of proof of concern about this?
Gut feeling.
Oh, it's
a gut feeling.
Yeah, inherently.
Feel it in your bones.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Matt and Air on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no trace then of the evil that lurks within.
Smiling or the evil that lurks within a facially, racially neutral tax code, but actually is not at all racially neutral in impact. That's what we're talking about this afternoon on Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. My special guest is Professor Dorothy Brown, who's the Martin Ginsburg Chair of Taxation at Georgetown University Law Center and the author of The Whiteness of Wealth, How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and How We Can Fix It. Thank you again for making time, Professor. We were talking about basically the federal government underwrote
I'm using that term in a broad sense, yes, underwrote white middle class home ownership coming through the 50s. Home ownership, the equity, the increase in value has built wealth, intergenerational wealth that then helps with educational attainment, acquiring more wealth, being able to invest. We have a tax code that privileges wealth over work by taxing wealth less than work. It shows up in another pernicious way, too. You know, we passed these laws in the 60s and the Fair Housing Act and the Civil Rights Act, and it was supposed to fix these things. And yet, Professor, we know that Black families walking into a bank to get a mortgage, less likely, even if they're way more well-qualified to receive their credit than a white family. Some of the statistics here are really shocking. Share a little bit of that with us, what your research has shown, Professor.
So what you see is subprime mortgages. Black and Hispanic families were targeted for subprime mortgages more than white income, white taxpayers with lower income levels. So what you, because subprime mortgages paid the mortgage broker at a higher fee than a regular mortgage. Yes. So even though a Black and Hispanic American were qualified for conventional financing, the mortgage broker steered them into subprime lending. We also see appraisal differences that an appraisal can come to a home, and if they see Black pictures on the wall and they think this is a home owned by a Black American, they will value it less than, and this has been tested, they come back and they, the this Black homeowner had their white neighbor sit in the house and remove all the Black pictures. The appraisal went up like a couple hundred thousand dollars.
A couple hundred thousand dollars. Dear friend of mine was like, Maggie, come on over. We're having a painting party. I said, why? I said, well, she was selling her house. She's like, I got to whitewash the house so it looks like white folks live here. And that's what we did. She literally like unblacked her house.
Yes.
It had people. Does anything look too Black, too ethnic in the house? Folks, if you haven't seen these statistics, Google is available to you. There's a whole system of information out there on the internet. You can Google house lending disparities, appraisal disparities by race. The studies are legion. It is proven fact. And here's the next thing that I wanted to ask you about, Professor. If we look at all of this as getting driven, the sort of first domino was, again, this federal underwriting of white home ownership, memorialized in redlining, discriminatory lending policies, it goes on and on. Then we doubled down on this as a society by tying the funding of public education, right, to property taxes, exacerbating the problem.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a book out by Andrew Carl, the historian, called The Black Tax, where he shows how racially discriminatory property taxes have always been and continue to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Black Tax.
It's almost depressing.
It is very depressing. So
almost.
But that's right. Because I want to ask you, what can we do? And here's the thing that I love about this. When I talk to white folks who get all, you know, ornery about talking about issues about race, I say, listen, we do better by Black folks and make the tax code work more fairly. It also will work for you because you work for a living. So how do we make this system less racially disparate? How do we make our tax code more fair?
So that's, you know, you raise an excellent point. And one of the things I always emphasize is tax laws may disadvantage Black Americans more, but it also disadvantages white Americans, and we cannot lose sight of that.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, there's a tax break for retirement accounts, but about half of white Americans don't have it. So it may be two-thirds of Black Americans, but half of white Americans don't have it. So, you know, reforming our tax laws are going to help white Americans who work for a living, like Black Americans who work for a living. And, you know, one of the things that I think needs to take place is taxing income from labor at the same rate that we tax income from stock and income from capital. It's unfair that I work hard. I work every day and I pay tax at a high rate. But if I sit at home and check my balance to see if the dividend was put into the account, I pay tax at a low rate. I'm just sitting there doing nothing, right? That's how whiteness of wealth is built. We have a tax break for inheritance. So gifts and inheritance. And let me be clear, it's easier to build wealth when somebody gives it to you.
Yeah, no. Yes. Money makes money. And it's sure easy when you start with a lot of it in the bank before you've worked a minute in your life. So we're talking about the difference between income tax levels and capital gains tax. We're talking about the estate tax exemptions. No damn good reasons for any of this. In fact, the argument that I make is people who work need to work. People who invest, that's the gravy. That's the money. They got left over after they've paid for medical, house, roof over their head, food on the table, heating, electricity, and shod their children. They got leftovers. That's their investment money, right?
That's right. That certainly should not be taxed at a lower rate than the tax on wages.
If somebody's listening right now and they want to learn more about this, if they want to ask a candidate an insightful question about this, where should they go to learn more? And what is the one question people should be thinking about asking candidates for whatever office we're talking about?
Well, so if it's a local office, I would ask about how they're trying to make property tax assessments fair, right? If it's local, I would do that. If it's national, then I would ask whether they support taxing income from wages equal to income from investments. And if they say no, find another candidate to support.
Yeah. If you work for a living, if you've got a trust fund and you just sit at That's home right. on your patoot, your economic self-interest is, don't tax that wealth so much. No.
That's right.
Tax the work. Professor Brown, it is really a pleasure and a privilege. I have such deep respect and reverence for your work. I would love to have you come back again because this is so critically important.
We just started.
Oh, wonderful. I love that. Her book is The Whiteness of Wealth, How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and How We Can Fix It. We'll put that title as well as the title of a couple of the other books that we mentioned during this segment in our show blurb for today. Thank you again, Professor Brown, for this edition of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. She's not a millionaire. She's one of us folks that work for a living. Thank you so That's much, right. Professor.
You're welcome.
Be well. We've got more Maggie Dawn Show coming up next with my friend and yours. The host of the new Dom Salvia Show is going to be joining me. We'll riff on the debate, maybe talk about some memorable presidential debate lines. There's a lot of them, Brian, a lot of them. So you're going to catch the farm update, and then Dom and I will be back. My little buddy's coming on the show. I'm so excited. Keep it locked, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
This is a special report from ABC News, the presidential debate. I'm Daria Albinger. They shook hands, and then the gloves came off at the ABC News presidential debate, the first face-off between Vice President Harris and former President Trump. He says she's copied some of his policies.
Everything that she believed 3 years ago and 4 years ago is out the window. She's going to my philosophy now. In fact, I was going to send her a MAGA hat.
And she had this to say about his claim. He left office with the best economy in U.S. history.
Donald Trump left us the worst unemployment since the Great Depression. Donald Trump left us the worst public health epidemic in a century. Donald Trump left us the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. And what we have done is clean up Donald Trump's mess.
This could be the only time the two meet to debate. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A recent study says 22% of teenagers have seriously considered committing suicide. Lisa Hale reports.
Bellin Health pediatrician Dr. Sherry Hoyman says checking in with your children, talking with them, is the most important thing you can do.
Don't let them be in their room all day long and not check in on them, right?
eat dinner together, talk about the day. If your child needs help, get them some counseling.
September is Suicide Prevention Month. I'm Lisa Hale.
A small business in Wisconsin is recognized as one of the best in the nation. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce calls Sky High Marketing in Waukesha one of the 100 best and brightest small businesses in America. Among other things, Sky High is recognized for innovative growth, commitment to community, and customer service. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabo. I almost feel sorry for the Kardashians. They just want to be left alone, but attention seems to find them. Take Dream Kardashian, for example. She's had a really big week, making her modeling debut, walking the runway with sass and attitude, creating a new Instagram page, and recently releasing her first single, a saucy tune called Besties Do It Better. The really amazing part? She's 7 and in second grade. Oh, but don't worry, there is serious parental oversight. Dream's parents are Blac Chyna and Rob Kardashian, the youngest and chubbiest of the Kardashian brood. I'll just leave you with a sample size of the lyrics for Besties Do It Better. It's Dream, I'm on the scene, and I'm the queen. There's no time to be mean. Besties do it better. That's my friend forever. I want my friend forever. Besties do it better. Her parents are terrible songwriters. They should have asked Uncle Kanye for help. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabo, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy skies and a few showers in the overnight. South winds breezy, lows near 60. On your Wednesday, mostly sunny skies will develop. South winds and highs in the middle 80s. We're talking temperatures in the upper 80s Thursday. Right now, it's 73.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabo.
Today's U.S. Bowling League Day. I am not in a bowling league. I think that would actually be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I do like to bowl. But
you got the bowling shirt going on tonight there, Pete.
I do have the bowling shirt. In case the game breaks out, I'm ready. Because I was raised, I'm a street bowler, Chris. I'm ready in case a game breaks out. It could happen.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabo. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
Wednesday, how you vote in November could determine whether China starts paring back its carbon emissions or feels it has a blank check to pollute all it wants.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You now have The Maggie Dawn Show, and now you have The Dom Salvia Show. We've joked about having The Maggie Dom Show. Dom Salvia joining me here in the WAUK studios. You can join us for our last half hour. We're going to have some yucks. We're going to listen to some sound. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I thought, let's start with Trump admitting that he lost the 2020 election,
Wait,
shall
what?
We? Yeah.
What? I mean, what's Charlie Kirk going to say about that?
Yeah. Or Nick Fuentes. I actually have Nick Fuentes.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking of. Fuentes.
Yes, he had a complete and total meltdown. I will read it to you in a moment, but let's listen to Trump admitting that, yeah, it turns out he actually did lose the election.
Say it again.
So I've done a lot of debating. Only as a politician, I never debated. My first debate was the Rosie O'Donnell debate, right? Famous Rosie O'Donnell debate, the answer. But I've done well with debates. I mean, I became president. I mean, then the second time I got millions more votes than I got the first time.
Here it is.
I was told if I got 63 million, which is what I got the first time, you would win. You can't not win. And I got millions of more votes than that and lost by a whisker.
What?
Wait. Lost by a whisker.
Lost by a whisker.
Turns out he lost.
He lost.
Lost by a whisker.
What? Whisker.
Hey, just so you know, everybody, I know exactly how much a whisker is. If you wanted to measure the amount of what a whisker in voting terms would be.
I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more that we have.
Lost by a whisker.
So he knew all along. How does that presidential immunity thing feel now, dear Supreme Court?
Right.
How do those 1,600 defendants, the J6 defendants, the Enrico Terrio, how's it feel? Turns out he knew all along. He lost by a whisker.
By a whisker. He's
lost by a whisker.
Said similar things in the past, alluding to the fact that you lost.
This was.
And guess what?
But this is, I lost.
Yes.
We could just cut off the end. I lost.
I lost.
Yeah.
I lost.
Lost by a whisker.
I lost.
Loser.
Yeah. It'd be nice if those folks he told to come down and be wild and you know, march up to the Capitol, if maybe he would have told them that then.
Yeah. You know, while police were getting beaten and knocked unconscious.
Law and order.
Law and order. I love the police. Here's what anti-Semites.
Who is Law and Order, by the way? Law and Order.
Law and Order. I think it's related to Leon.
We've digressed.
Yes.
Here's anti-Semite, Nazi, white supremacist, homophobic, Christian nationalist. All around, really nice guy. No.
Oh, okay.
Right wing nut job, Nick Fuentes, who, of course, Trump has had to Mar-a-Lago to have dinner with.
Well, yep. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Of course.
Here's what Nick Fuentes said after Trump's interview, which was on September 3rd. It was a week ago today on the Lex Fridman podcast. It's episode number 442. Lex Fridman, that is Fridman, excuse me, Lex Fridman podcast, episode number 442. CJ, go listen to it. Here you go. This is Nick Fuentes freaking out. Okay. Here's what he had to say. This was on his podcast. So why did we stop the steal? Why did anyone go to January 6th? Why is anyone sitting in jail? Why did anything bad happen to anybody? Why did everybody get censors? Why is everything bad that has happened to people that were involved? Why did that need to happen if you're just going to walk it all back and say, oh, well, I lost? Well, it would have been good to know before 1,600 people got charged. It would have been good to know that before I had all my money frozen, was put on the no-fly list, got banned from everything, lost all banking and payment processing. It would have been good to know that before I, in 2017, dedicated my life to an 18-year-old in college. It feels like a big ripoff. It just goes to show what a tremendous betrayal it is. It's just, I can't even keep up the whiny voice. It's just a callous indifference to the sacrifices that his supporters made on his behalf. Nick, we tried to tell you.
Right?
Everyone tried to tell you and the 1,600 knuckle-dragging J6 insurrectionists. We all told you. You're still a racist, misogynistic, hate-filled, fascist, xenophobe.
And he's mad because what? Trump gave up the story? He dropped the line that he actually
lost by a whisker.
He actually lost. Is that what his big complaint is? And let me tell you something, Trump. Oh, I was told if I got 63 million votes, I'd win.
Unless the other person gets more.
This is what I'm saying. Are you kidding me? This is how it works. It is literally a game of numbers. And I remember specifically back in 16, David Plouffe was on the Devil's Advocates, and he guaranteed a Hillary victory. He guaranteed it to me. So was that?
Did she have the election
stolen from her? And of course, there was some concerns with the Russian influence and whatnot. But you know what she did? She didn't march to the Capitol with her supporters and crap all over the walls and beat the hell out of cops.
No.
She acknowledged the loss the next day, I believe, and it was on. And here we go, President Trump.
That's why Liz Cheney calls the man depraved. It's why Liz and Dick Cheney, there was a weird moment yesterday afternoon because we were talking about Liz and Dick Cheney coming out with this letter on Friday, endorsing Kamala Harris, saying that they're going to vote for her, calling out Republicans who haven't made the commitment to vote for Kamala Harris because he is, her words, depraved. Dick Cheney's words, a threat to democracy in our Democratic Republic. I was referring to Dick Cheney as Darth Vader. And of course, then James Earl Jones passed away. Yeah, the voice of Darth Vader passed away. R.I.P.
Yeah.
But it came to my attention that Liz Cheney also had some other recent things to say about Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. Shall we take a listen?
Let's do it.
She speaks slowly, so it takes a minute to get through all of it, but it is worth the wait, my friends, I promise you. This is Liz Cheney being interviewed at a symposium that was put on by The Atlantic, I believe, just last week. Let's take a listen. The long one. Let's do the long one.
How do you think she should proceed?
Look, I think that, every opportunity that Donald Trump gets to show the American people who he is, he pretty clearly, and look, his running mate is doing this too. I mean, you know, this is my diplomatic way of saying it. They're misogynistic pigs.
Liz Cheney's got jokes. She's got jokes, everybody. Woo!
I think that will become clear. I mean, I think that the Vice President Harris has demonstrated, particularly if you watch the speech we were talking about at the convention. Right. A focus on seriousness and substance and policy. I think that for people who sort of say, if you have conservatives who might say, I'm thinking of voting for Trump because he's a conservative. Mm-hmm. He is not a conservative. And when you look at the contrast in terms of policies, for example, when it comes to things like NATO, when it comes to things like the support of Ukraine, when you look at the proposals that he's made to impose massive tariffs, for example, I think that there are a whole range of policy issues that raise very serious concerns. But we would. Sometimes you hear from Trump supporters that they want to just let Trump be Trump. And, I endorse that. Let that guy go. Because the more people see him and the more, frankly, at the end of the day, I think that women around this country, we've had enough. We've had enough. And,
right.
And I think what that means is that people have got to step up. And realize, I mean, again, look at what J.D. Vance says on an almost daily basis about women. I mean, that guy's got a real women problem. I don't know what it is, and I don't want to psychoanalyze him.
He's a weirdo.
Yes.
And there's a lot of eyeliner jokes to be made in there. But
Liz got jokes.
But I think that, at the end of the day, if you listen to what he says about women, and you look at Donald Trump and what Donald Trump has done and what he says about women, these are not people that we can entrust with power again. But that means women and men. But we've got to get out there and vote. We got to make sure people are registered. You got to drive people to the polls. It really, really matters this time.
Liz Cheney, folks, the conservative of conservatives, Republican, former congressman from...
Rhino!
Yeah.
Rhino!
from Wyoming, telling it like it is in breathtaking simplicity, including eyeliner jokes. Dom, your reaction? I mean,
she's such a nasty
trust
woman.
Fund. Such a nasty woman.
Obviously, in some ways, Nick Fuentes was right in his comments about Trump losing and what that did to him and everybody else who, quote unquote, believed it. Liz Cheney is right in this. Dick Cheney is right in talking about this in terms of a threat to democracy.
Yes.
And when the war criminal Dick Cheney, Darth Vader himself, says that Republican that makes a candidate is so dangerous, we can't be having anywhere near the halls of power again.
You might want to listen to Darth Vader.
I just think you might want to listen to him. When someone says about the power of the Force of Darth Vader, listen to him. You know, he's Darth Vader.
I mean, just to summarize, like, the last week's haps, okay? We got Donald Trump announcing the weave, right?
Oh, yeah, man.
The weave. You know what the weave is?
It's like
nine different things, and they all come brilliantly together. And it's like friends of mine that are like English professors. They say it's the most brilliant thing I've ever seen. No, it's not. We got the weave. We got the 45-minute press conference about rape. He brings up allegations from 20 years ago, and he's like, well, that didn't happen. Then why are you talking about it?
Well, it's just another example of the sexual assaults that didn't happen, and let me tell you about more of them.
More of them, yes. Thank you for reminding us, Donald. Maybe Kamala can bring up each and every one of those.
I would hope so.
Say their name. You got J.D. Vance on women, part 342, version 4. You got Trump on women, and this child care.
Oh, policies.
Yeah, but not tariffs. 45, again, the rape thing for 45 minutes, disrespects veterans, the Arlington controversy.
Oh, that was so long ago. Are we still talking about that? Are we still talking about that?
400, Trump disrespects veterans, number 487. Take three.
Say veterans, Trump says suckers and losers.
Yeah, right. You got Tucker with the Nazi sympathizer, Holocaust denier. Elon's going to be the efficiency chief. Everybody wants that in government.
Leon's very concerned about illegal votes.
Leon, yes. A new indictment alleges MAGA influencers are on the Russian payroll. Candace Owens has totally gone full Jewish hater. It's like, what? Wait a minute. This is, I believe that this was Charlie Sykes quoted William Shakespeare here. Hell is empty and all the devils are here. From the Tempest.
We are here. It is any one of these individual items in a normal world. When I was the world I was growing up in.
Disqualifying.
Any one of them.
A
single one. Dining with Nazis. Disqualifier.
Done. Rape.
Disqualifier.
Fraud.
Disqualifier.
Getting your picture taken on a boat with someone who's not your wife, Gary Hart, how'd that go for you?
Oh, terrible. Oh, can't possibly. Oh, you got to go, man. And the weave. That's a great, great point. What English professors? What English teachers?
You're listening to the Talk of Lacrosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Dom Salvia.
Next time, the aftermath of the most important debate of your lifetime. Special guest host Matt Rothschild will help us break it down. Figure out what it all means.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Most people out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. Talk to someone if you're struggling with mental health. Because most people out here really care. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. Soaring high above Lacrosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX Lacrosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.